Like you, I have struggled this week with a broken heart in light of the election. But it's also caused me to think deeply about what I need to do and what I believe all of us need to do in the days and years ahead. Much of it was reflected in the reading this morning by Parker Palmer. I want to begin my sermon with a reading of the first quotation, which is on the back of your order of service by Terry Tempest Williams. The human heart is the first home of democracy. It is where we embrace our questions. Can we be equitable? Can we be generous? Can we listen with our whole beings, not just our minds, and offer our attention rather than our opinions? And do we have enough resolve in our hearts to act courageously, relentlessly, without giving up ever, trusting our fellow citizens to join with us in our determined pursuit of a living democracy? We are living in dark times, a time of civic rupture and discord. It is a time of heartbreak for many Americans, most especially the majority of American voters who supported Hillary Clinton, but as well those voters who did so not in support of her as president, but in opposition to the presidency of a man who has openly supported white supremacy, misogyny, nativism, authoritarianism, all the trademarks of fascism. I want to preface my remarks this morning by first reassuring you that I am a devoted defender of democracy, and most especially in the church that claims to be the voice of religious freedom. I am for freedom of conscience in the church and do staunchly defend the presence of conservative voice in our congregations, which on occasion is my own. We would be diminished as a congregation if we were to enforce or even encourage a form of religious and political correctness. I served as president of Unitarian Universalists for Freedom of Conscience for 15 years. It is a national organization committed to defending political and religious diversity in our congregations. Ordinarily, I do not speak out in regard to electoral politics, but this Sunday is different. Today, the former leader of the Ku Klux Klan, David Duke, is gleefully celebrating, in the present atmosphere of intimidation and fear, a political triumph of his values. In a tweet following the election, David Duke wrote, "Anyone telling you this was a vote for unity in America is a liar, and they know it." I hope today my thoughts and words transcend the ranting of all partisan politics, including those whose political views I may share. The simple expression of outrage and disgust impedes the learning we need to accomplish if we are to be able to constructively respond to our nation's deepest needs. I wholeheartedly affirm the healthy conflict between liberals and conservatives that is a part of our democratic discourse. My concern is not so much about who won the election, but about the erosion of trust in our political institutions and in democracy itself. It can no longer be said that the American people and the American political system is immune to demagogues and demagoguery. We have, with this election, crossed that threshold. For us, the question is, where do we go from here? Perhaps there is some consolation in the words of the American poet Theodore Ruthke. In a dark time, the eye begins to see. I hope so, because my long-held vision of America no longer appears to be reliable. I feel as if I am no longer able to read American culture, at least in a hopeful manner, despite my educated efforts to do so. My usual periodicals, the New York Times, the Atlantic Magazine, the New Yorker, Harper's, did not take account of the thoughts and feelings of many, many angry, disillusioned Americans. I am praying in these uncertain times that our eyes will be open to new insights and new life. We must keep an open mind and an open heart if a tenable path forward is to be found. At stake is our common future and the vitality of the fragile democracy we inherited and neglect at our peril. In the meantime, it feels like the dark night of the American soul. Like many of those Americans who voted for Donald Trump, I too find it hard to make sense of the 21st century. Like many of them, I feel a little like a displaced person in an American culture that is unraveling before my eyes. Perhaps this is what is meant by the poet, in a dark time, the eye begins to see. However, I would add the biblical phrase, in a dark time, the eye begins to see through a glass darkly. I think I know what the poet Theodore Ruthka means by that phrase. The Japanese describe the experience of living in a dark time as eating the bitter. As you know, the first impulse when tasting something bitter is, with disgust, to spit it out. At this time in American history, maybe we, and I mean you and I, mostly well-intentioned liberal Democrats, members of America's educated middle class, are required to eat the dark shadow of America's angry, tortured soul personified in the figure of Donald Trump. Maybe at times like this, we are called on to practice a kind of spiritual democracy and reaffirm the religious base of democracy. Perhaps we need to focus on what binds all of us together, and to collectively reaffirm democracy's spiritual underpinnings, rather than focusing by way of partisan politics on what tears us apart. I have tried to put this election in some historical perspective. The angry rhetoric I have heard for many months from Donald Trump and his angry supporters was familiar to me. It echoed back to September 11, 2001, when a small band of radical Islamic terrorists attacked the American homeland. That event may have deepened our appreciation of democracy, but it also activated demons that are still at play today. Motivated by overwhelming emotions of anxiety and fear, we went to war in a reckless fashion against a country that was not even connected to the attack. That war continues still today, extending now throughout the Middle East, even throughout the world. As a consequence of those events, many Americans were willing to not only enter an unnecessary war, but to also abandon many of their constitutional rights in the name of national security. When some Americans protested, many other Americans, including prominent politicians, were quick to accuse them of being unpatriotic. Following these historical threads helps me to understand what happened in the presidential election. In my lifetime, we have also witnessed the rapid erosion of the middle class while at the same time watching the growing power of big money. There is now an oligarchy of wealth in America that is all but unrivaled, usurping the will of the people. The fear and fragmentation of these economic and political conditions have created both racial and class divisions that are now a staple of our national life. Our growing distrust of the other beyond our borders has hardened, and we are now making aliens of foreigners. Americans have forgotten we are a land of immigrants and that our differences are among our most valuable assets. What happened to "we have nothing to fear but fear itself"? Where have we, the people, gone? When things we care about fall apart, heartbreak happens. We are collectively entering what I would describe as a dark time, but it is we who have the power to reclaim democracy for its highest purposes. We are the ones who cannot allow ourselves to be divided and conquered by the enemy within and among us. David Brooks cautioned his readers in an editorial column on Thursday of this week in the New York Times, "Outrage and disgust impede learning. This century is still being formed, and none of us understand it yet. The century really began on 9/11, and so far it has been marked by strong reactions against globalism and cosmopolitanism, by terrorism, tribalism, and authoritarianism. The election, as well as events in Europe, are a warning sign that there is some deeper dysfunction in our economic, social, and cultural systems. If you want to take that warning sign and dismiss it as simple bigotry, you are never going to pause long enough to understand what's going on, and you will never know how to constructively respond. It seems important that we be humbled and taught by this horrific election result. When one looks back over the course of American history to discover some earlier period in which Americans were so sharply divided, hoping to glean some insight in how to best respond to the conflict, anger, and despair we witness today, it is the figure of Abraham Lincoln who has much to teach us, especially in our own misery and hopelessness over America's future. As a chronic sufferer of depression or melancholy, as it was named in the 19th century, Lincoln recognized the need to preserve his life with well-being, to preserve his life and well-being by embracing and integrating his own darkness and light. Lincoln's capacity to achieve this integration by means of his own willpower is what empowered him in the preservation of the Union. According to Joshua Schenck, author of Lincoln's Melancholy, because Lincoln knew dark and light intimately, knew them as inseparable elements of everything human, he refused to split North and South into good guys and bad guys, a split that might have taken us closer at that most horrific moment in American history to a national version of suicide. In Lincoln's second inaugural address, delivered a month before the end of the Civil War, Lincoln appealed for malice toward none and charity for all. Lincoln's engagement with the people of the Union and the Confederacy was animated by an awe-inspiring sense of love for all who bore the brunt of battle. In Lincoln's appeal to a deeply divided America, he points to an essential fact of our life together. If we are to survive and thrive, we must hold its divisions and contradictions with compassion, lest we lose our democracy. I hope you appreciate how Lincoln's response to America's Civil War is relevant for us today. Parker Palmer, a writer I have admired for many years, is a man personally familiar with depression and the dark night of the soul. Parker has experienced periods of deep clinical depression in his life and knows well the dark night of the soul. Parker Palmer believes Abraham Lincoln has much to teach us today. Parker reveres Abraham Lincoln as a national leader because Lincoln taught Americans how to embrace political tension in a way that opens our hearts to each other, no matter how deep our differences. The way of the open heart begins for each of us in here as we work on reconciling whatever divides us from ourselves, our own anger, prejudice, and bigotry, and then moves out with healing power into a world of many, many divides. Drawing light out of darkness, community out of chaos, and life out of death. Using Lincoln as a guide, let us begin to reflect on our own ability to reach across the divides that threaten our union today. To be a good citizen and a trust holder for democracy, we will need to find a true point of identity with people whose basic beliefs are contrary to our own. In another column in the New York Times, the conservative columnist David Brooks cautioned against emotions like disgust, because they don't do justice to the complexity of Donald Trump's supporters. Brooks writes, "The disgusted posture risks turning politics into a Manichaean civil war between alleged children of light and the alleged children of darkness, between us enlightened, college-educated, tolerant people and the supposed primitive horde driven by dark fears and prejudices. That crude and ignorant condescension is what feeds the Trump phenomenon in the first place." So my message to you this morning is that it is we who need to learn how to look beyond our enmity and prejudice toward those Trumpians who voted for Donald Trump. We will need to address our shared responsibility for our country's abandonment of working-class families in the Rust Belt. All those angry people living in towns where there are no jobs, watching their friends OD on opiates, scrambling every month to pay the electric bill and put food on the table. Trump's success is understandable when you stand in the shoes of the other, Imagine along comes a guy who was not part of the political establishment, not one of those who has ignored you and your family as you slipped into chronic poverty and hopelessness. Yes, he is loudmouthed, and one is uncertain as to what he really plans to do, but he reflects what you feel in your gut, if not in your heart. Beneath the expressions of anger and resentment, wrapped in a familiar bigotry you may or may not share, is a righteous indignation by the people who feel as if they are being thrown out like the trash. Sam Keen, the author of Faces of the Enemy, Reflections of the Hostile Imagination, provides some insight into our Manichaean civil war between the alleged children of light and the alleged children of darkness. I've adapted it to our present-day method for creating the enemy. It's titled To Create the Enemy. Start with an empty canvas. Sketch in broad outline the forms of men, women, and children. Dip into the unconscious well of your own disowned darkness with a wide brush and stain the strangers with the sinister hue of the shadow. Trace under the face of America's trailer trash and rednecks the greed, hatred, carelessness you dare not claim as your own. Obscure the sweet individuality of each face. Erase all hints of the myriad loves, hopes, fears that play through the kaleidoscope of every finite heart. Twist the smile until it forms the downward arc of cruelty. Exaggerate each feature until they are metamorphosized into beast and vermin. Fill in the background with malignant figures from ancient nightmares, fascists, brown shirts, the KKK, thugs and hoods of evil. When your icon of the enemy is complete, you will be able to discard them as garbage without guilt or shame. The thing you destroy will have become merely an enemy of your beloved community, an impediment to your dreams of enlightenment and a vision of social progress. What do you and I have in common with people who, for example, regard their religious or political convictions as so authoritative that they feel no need to listen to anyone who sees things differently, especially that group of extremists who would perhaps use violence to advance their views? I turn to my own personal experience of political heartbreak for a clue. Perhaps we share with them an abiding grief over some of modernity's worst features, the loss of idealism to a mindless relativism, a corrosive cynicism regarding government and public service, and a disdain for tradition and human dignity, most disturbing a growing indifference to suffering and death throughout the world. There is much rage in American politics today. In response to rage, I have one non-negotiable conviction: violence can never be the answer. Instead, we must protect people's freedom to believe and behave as they will, within the rule of law. Putting aside my criticisms of the Electoral College, I believe we must assent to majority rule while dedicating ourselves to protecting minority rights. Embrace and act on our responsibility to care for one another. Seek to educate ourselves about our critical differences and come together in dialogue toward mutual understanding and speak without fear against all that diminishes us, including the use of violence. If we practice these disciplines and begin to share the sources of our pain with one another, instead of hurling our convictions like rocks at enemies, I believe we have a chance to open our hearts and connect across some of our great divides. We need to speak to the American people outside the box or boxes of partisan politics and the inevitable polarizing effect it has on our common life. We need to lay down our convictions and political strategies and enter into a politics of the brokenhearted. This is not a new political strategy or the strategic rhetoric of political organizing. Its origins are in the language of human wholeness, wedded to a notion of the democratic self. It is the practice of a spirituality of democracy. In conclusion, I began this morning's sermon with a quotation on the back of your order service written by Terry Tempest Williams, "The human heart is the first home of democracy." I want to conclude with a second quotation on the back of your order of service by Parker Palmer from his book, Healing the Heart of Darkness, The Courage to Create a Politics Worthy of the Human Spirit. Parker Palmer writes, "Democracy is a non-stop experiment in the strength and weakness of our political institutions, our local communities and associations, and the human heart. The democratic experiment is endless unless we blow up the lab and the explosives to do the job are found within us. But so also is the heart's alchemy that can turn suffering into community, conflict into the energy of creativity, and tension into an opening toward the greater common good. For this, I hope all of us do pray. Amen, amen, amen."